See, it's Jerry here with us. Jerry, how are you?
Hello, Dave.
Good. Listen, I'm sorry to keep you waiting so long there, but I just want to take a look at something here because something I haven't mentioned in the newspapers this morning. I'll just give you some of the headlines here. The Irish Daily Mirror front page: hijackers flew jet towards remote island, mystery men disabled tracking device and turned plane west. And that's a quote in the Examiner: its missing plane may have flown for 5 hours after it disappeared. In the Independent: piracy link and jet inquiry. And it goes on to say, passengers may be held hostage, claim US investigators. In the Irish Times: mystery of missing flight holds a grim fascination. And even in here, the Star: pirates took jet to secret location. Now, we've heard more on the news just there now, because the search is going on for the Malaysia Airlines flight 370. It lost contact at 1:30 a.m. last Saturday, which is over a week ago now, en route to Beijing. News reports today are suggesting that investigators increasingly believe that the plane may have been deliberately diverted from its course. However, still no sign of the plane. Begs the question, how does a plane carrying 239 people with a superb, and I quote that one, safety record just disappear without trace? Now, freelance aviation journalist Jerry Byrne, that is, you've been following this closely, as has everybody else. So let's take a look at the very, like, there's a thousand things we could be asking. Why wasn't Malaysia Airlines Flight 370 picked up by radar, Jerry?
Well, there's two types of radar. There's the old-fashioned kind, known as primary radar, and there's the newer kind called secondary surveillance radar, SSR. And the air traffic controllers worldwide pretty much use nothing else but SSR, the secondary surveillance radar. And what that does, it has two ways of looking at a target, shall we say, or an image of an aircraft. One is the primary radar, which gives you just a little blip, a little dot on the screen. You don't know whether that's an... Indeed, in Dublin Airport years ago, when they only had primary radar, they used to get confused with the trains going past on the Dublin-Belfast line. So secondary surveillance radar is fabulous stuff. The aircraft broadcasts information which appears on the radar screen. Its flight number or its identification number, what they call the squawk number, its direction, its altitude, even its speed is on this little block of information which appears on the screen. So they know at a glance that this is the Malaysian airliner, that it's heading towards Beijing, that it's flying at 40,000 feet or whatever. So fabulous information. But when that information is lost, unless you have your radar tuned specifically just to pick up dots, it disappears from your screen. If the little device for broadcasting that information, called a transponder, is switched off in the airplane.
Okay, well, wait a minute. You mentioned the word blip there, and a lot of the papers go on about the word ping, and I'm sorry to get into ridiculous semantics here, but, like, I mean, is the ping the blip? Because people say, like that the ping signal was kept alive, yeah. And does that therefore...
Ping is there's a ping and a blip.
Oh, right. Jeepers,
creepers. Very complicated stuff.
Certainly is. Because, I mean, like, you know, so, okay, let's put it this way then. Some form of signalling was picked up,
yeah,
indicating, I presume, that the plane remained in the air.
That's right. This is what's known. Well, there's two types of signalling was picked up. The military radar, let's just stick with radar for the moment. The military radar is looking for bad guys, guys who do not want to announce their presence, certainly don't want to tell you what their flight number is, the speed they're traveling at, and where they're coming from. So it's looking at primary radar sources, and it can see a dot on the screen, a little blip on the screen, and it can track that, right? Now, that's what was picked up subsequently. The military said, hey, we've got this little blip going in the other direction from where this Malaysian aircraft was heading towards China. And this one is heading in the opposite direction. Wonder what that is. Now, they seem to have overlooked it at the time and only went back and looked over their tapes. All this stuff, incidentally, is recorded so they can play it back. And they went back looking at the tapes and said, hey, gosh, that looks like that blip starts where this plane left off, as it were, you know where the secondary surveillance radar left off, and they saw it heading in the other direction. Now, the pings is a different thing altogether. The pings is, I never thought I'd be on radio talking about blips and pings, but there you go. The pings are where ACARS, which is an automatic reporting system, which the aircraft has, and it basically reports on the technical health of the aircraft. And that bounces off a satellite, which bounces back down to Boeing or Rolls-Royce, the makers of the engine, and the engines. And they have all this electronic data, and they're able to tell how an aeroplane is operating and how well it's doing. Ryanair, for example, has a very, very sophisticated system, and it can tell a pilot there's something about to go wrong.
Well, then, what is all this information that's coming out now? What's it telling you? Well, I mean, inquiries are increasingly focused on foul play. Do you see it looks less like an accident, more like a criminal event?
I think it is. Well, I've been thinking that for the past two, 3 days. Yeah, it's looking very, very sinister, as though somebody has actually taken over this airplane and is flying it in a different direction.
But hold on. Took over the airplane, flew it in a different direction. That's in the past tense. So to what? To a watery grave or to...
Well, we just don't know. These aircraft have a range of upwards of 10,000 miles. And you can get to an awful lot of places from Kuala Lumpur in Malaysia. If you have a radius of 10,000 miles, you can get to North Korea. You can get to the Middle East. You could be in Ethiopia. You could be in Syria. You could be in Somalia. You could be in Jeddah, you know. So it's fascinating. And if they fly it over the sea, they're blind. Radar won't pick them up. You know, if they take the long way, for example, to the Middle East, if that's where they're going, or to one of these Chinese republics that there's a lot of trouble in.
Well, has it happened in the past that a plane as big as this, has just disappeared without trace?
Yes.
And where?
A few years ago, Air France Flight 447, coming from South America to Paris, disappeared over
South Atlantic. Wasn't that found within a few days?
It was found in a few days, but the actual fuselage, the main part of the wreckage, wasn't found for more than 18 months.
Yeah, the black boxes weren't got for about 2 years or so.
That's right. Yeah.
What is it about the black boxes? I mean, only a certain amount of bodies were found as well, like a very small percentage, really. So, like, what does that mean? I mean, can the black boxes of this plane be traced in any way at all, that they are still A, functioning, B, alive on a plane, or C, under the water?
Well, under normal circumstances, the black boxes will have a backup power supply, but that's no use if the pilots turn them off as well. And there have been cases of pilots deliberately turning off the black boxes. Famous case of an Indonesian pilot, not a million miles from where we're looking at here in Malaysia, who turned off the black boxes and then deliberately crashed his airplane to try and collect, presumably, an enormous life insurance policy. He was heavily in debt, and this was Silk Air in, I think, 1997. There have been other cases where the black boxes were turned off deliberately by pilots who are up to no good. Pilots who make errors, for example, and don't want their employers to know about it, have been known to turn off black boxes. So it's quite a... And tracking them is difficult. In the event of a crash, there is a beacon goes off if the black box is in contact with water. There is a beacon goes off. But if there isn't a crash, that beacon isn't going to go off. So tracking the aircraft through the black boxes is very, very difficult. Now, one has to assume that the aircraft, if it has been hijacked and if it has been diverted, is landed by now and is covered with camouflage netting or whatever, you know. If that is the case, it's almost a replay of earlier situations. I mean, obviously, the most recent horror story about hijackings was the 9/11, you know, the attacks on the Twin Towers. But previous to that, in 1970, you had five aircraft hijacked within days of each other by the Palestinian Liberation Front, and four of them diverted to the Middle East, and I think all four of them were blown up. This was the famous Lilia Khaled incident. I don't know if you're old.
Black September and all that stuff.
Black September. Yeah, it led to Black September, absolutely. Yeah. Mm. So, you know, I've just been calculating some of the places this airplane could have got to, and it's quite enormous. You know, lots of lots of old, disused military World War II airstrips littered all over the world, which a plane like this, if they were remote enough, it could have been put down on. A lot will depend, and we haven't heard this yet from Kuala Lumpur, and I'd be very interested to learn, how much fuel did the pilot take on when he took off? Did he fully load the tanks? He didn't need fully loaded tanks to get to Beijing, which was his original destination, but did he take on more fuel than he needed?
Well, I'm just looking at the latest news from this morning, Saturday morning. Police began searching the home, it says here, of the pilot of the missing Malaysia Airlines flight this morning after the country's prime minister confirmed the plane was suspected to have been deliberately diverted. Police officers arrived at the home of the captain shortly after prime minister ended a news conference on the search. Mr. Razak, who is the prime minister, he said communications aboard the missing jet were switched off. So he's saying that the communications aboard the missing jet were switched off and its course deliberately changed by someone on board before the aircraft disappeared a week ago. However, he did stop short of saying that it had been hijacked. So the decompression situation, that has happened before. What exactly does that mean?
Well, that basically means you where air escapes from the fuselage. It's the simplest explanation. When you're flying, they fly at 5-6 miles up in the air to save fuel because the air is thinner and the plane goes quicker with less fuel. But you and I couldn't survive very long up there because that's the height of Everest, even higher than Everest. And when you always see these photographs of people on Everest with oxygen supplies, you know. And you do get a disease called, or an ailment called a hypoxia, where the brain is starved of oxygen, and you can have less than a minute of useful consciousness left if a hole appears in the aircraft and all the pressurized air escapes.
Yeah.
Now, if that happened and the pilots were unconscious, the plane would, you'd have been able to track the plane. And this has happened. There was a Helios aircraft a few years back flying from Cyprus to Greece.
That's right.
And the pilot, they never switched on the pressurization system so that you could breathe at those high altitudes. And everybody fell unconscious. And
wasn't that the case with Payne Stewart, the golfer?
Payne Stewart, exactly, yeah.
And again, it was like the Learjet was flying for 4 or 5 hours and everybody knew that there was something wrong and knew that all that was going to happen was it was going to crash.
They run out of fuel and
were the people on board that plane dead already?
They would have been certainly unconscious.
Right.
Unconsciousness happens very quickly.
Right.
In the event of hypoxia, particularly at very high altitudes.
There's a question here, 51552. It says, ask your guest, if the plane went off course, was it not in danger of being in the path of another plane? That comes in from Peter.
Absolutely. And if the aircraft's transponder is switched off, other aircraft, it is possible, incidentally, to fly without air traffic control because your transponder broadcasts not just to air traffic control but to other aircraft who can see you and take evading action. So you are running a risk, yeah.
The area in which they're looking, I mean, wouldn't it be fair to say that a normal investigation becomes narrower with time? And this one has gone the exact opposite in some ways because the suggestion that it didn't break up in mid-air means that they're wondering, did it just go off in a different direction? I mean, like, you know, the plane, some people would say, would have veered off, you know, cutting its transponders and the search then not expanding in the sort of area we expect. So basically nobody really knows. There's
nobody
no debris,
really knows,
no evidence.
Yeah, one very recent report coming out of Malaysia is they're alerting ground-based authorities in Asia to have a look at it, to have a possible look for it, because the possibility remains it could have headed into towards, you know, mainland China, Mongolia, that sort of thing.
And also the amount of money it takes to sort of actually search, the countries involved just don't have the money. And also I heard a thing on the radio the other day saying that the shallow waters around Malaysia, and if you're going towards the Indian Ocean, you're talking seriously deep waters.
Well, you can have canyons. This was the case with the Air France jet. Indeed, it was at the bottom of an underwater mountain range, you know.
But wasn't the Air France one from a few years ago a confluence of, like, I mean, there was a thing about the ice, there was a thing about not being able to read exactly what was happening, there was a thing about pilot error as well, because the main pilot, not that he going asleep is a problem, but the other two guys just did the wrong thing and went straight into the storm. Wasn't there about 7 different things that went wrong?
But ultimately it was pilot error.
Yeah. Yeah.
There is, I mean, basically they had a mismatch between their instruments. One side of the cockpit was saying one thing, the other side, because the probes or the speedometer for the aircraft was iced up, and on the other side it was saying another thing, and they didn't. There are checks that you can do. This happened on some Ryanair aircraft recently, where they were getting two different readings from their probes, as it were, their pitot tubes. And they were able to check and do very, very quick calculations and work out which was working and which wasn't, and they were able to land their aircraft safely. There was a fault with the heaters, the anti-icing heaters, on the Ryanair aircraft, and the pilots very, very quickly discovered what was wrong and sorted it all out. The Air France pilots, doesn't appear to have occurred to them.
Okay, but does it, with what we're talking about now over the last week, is it odd that if it is hijackers, would you not think that they or their organisation might have come forward by now?
Not necessarily,
yeah.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Because, I mean, the longer a thing, I mean, like the old Paddy Power story there last week about the Oscar Pistorius trial,
Putting bets on is he guilty or not, kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, it took them several days to apologise. In the meantime, everybody was talking about Paddy Power. And the longer you leave something, the more speculation will eventually focus on possible, like the Twin Towers, 9/11. To this day, I don't think Al-Qaeda formally claimed responsibility. But we're all talking about them.
The safety record... it's been described as superb. What does superb necessarily mean? That it can, because of so many hours have been flown, and there's very little. Wasn't there one in San Francisco? The same kind of plane just a few years ago.
It was exactly the same kind of plane. That was the first
last year.
Yeah, that was the first fatal accident of this aircraft, which has been flying around for I think more than a decade, and that was the first fatal aircraft, and that was pilot error. And indeed, one of those fatalities, a young Chinese girl, have been killed by a fire truck.
That's true. She was under loads of foam or something, and the fire truck was coming. Yeah, that's right. Okay, so what happens next? Who does what? I mean, look at these. I mean, the headlines of the papers really are. They're like something, obviously the internet is having a field day. They're like something out of the movie Lost. I mean, television. They really
that
are.
That occurred
to me. That's really it.
It could turn up in Hawaii or somewhere like that. You've just got to find the plane. I think what's going to happen, too, is military radar installations and, indeed, air traffic control installations will be asked to review their tapes because all these tapes are kept for a certain period, I think up to a month in most cases, and play back these tapes. See, is there an unidentified blip? Here's the thing. I mean, I told you the story about the air traffic controllers in Dublin years ago. Mm. Mistaking the Dublin Belfast train for an aircraft, a flock of birds could paint a signal on a radar screen on a primary.
Wait a minute! You can get a blip or a ping from a flock of birds.
You can get, and so it doesn't. A military guy could be sitting there and he could be looking at his radar screen and he sees this thing going across and he says, "Oh, it's probably just a light aircraft not equipped, or it's a flock of birds." And a lot of these things are disregarded. So I think that when people turn their radars back on, review their tapes, they'll look for these things that were disregarded and say, hey, could this be the missing Malaysian plane? So if that happens, we might get a better picture.
Okay, there's a question here. It says, why did people's phones keep ringing? They could not work if they were in the sea, ? On that. And first of all, a lot of people said that these phones did keep ringing well after the plane was supposedly lost. First of all, are they right? Were the phones really ringing? Can they prove it?
I honestly don't know the answer to that question. I'm not a phone expert.
Well, let's put a question like this. Could the phones keep ringing if they had plunged into either the Indian Ocean or anywhere else?
Possibly, because, I mean, there are phones that actually ring in the exchange. When I say the exchange, I'm talking about the computer that handles all your phone calls. And you could be ringing a little...
Of course, yeah.
Part of that system, which records... Because the phone company has to record your calls, the duration of the calls, the distance, the call, is it long distance or short distance, so that they know how to charge you. So that might have been happening.
Okay, well then, finally, do you think, Jerry, that at some point something was deliberately turned off?
I don't think there's any doubt of it at this stage. I think something deliberate was done. Whether they were hijackers, bad guys who got on the plane, like these Iranians that are supposed to have been travelling on stolen passports.
On the false passports or the stolen passports.
Or indeed, some conspiracy involving the pilots. We just don't know. And even everything I've said today is still conjecture because it's not 100% proven. But it's beginning to certainly look like a hijack.
I remember something about pilots. There was two things. There was one off the coast of New York, one of the worst American disasters, sometime about 10 years ago or so. Into the sea. And there was another one very soon after 9/11 into some part of New York. Do you remember that one?
And
that was something to do with pilots again? Or
well, the New York one might have been a TWA 800, where a plane did blow up in midair, and that was, I think, 1996.
Yeah, and that went into the sea.
That went into Long Island Sound.
But the one that went into some borough of New York very soon after 9/11.
Yeah, that was American Airlines flight, a Boeing 7, not a Boeing, it was actually an Airbus, an earlier version of the Airbus, and that was heading for South America, I think. And that was actually pilot error at the end of the day.
Oh, it was pilot error, right, it wasn't deliberate. Yeah.
He was... The pilot was handling the aircraft a bit too energetically, shall we say. They were flying in the wake of another airplane, so they were getting a lot of turbulence.
Yeah.
So the pilot said, oh, I'll fly out of this jet stream, as it were, and he manipulated the rudder very, very hard and snapped it off. And when they examined the black boxes, they realized he was... You know, he exceeded the ability. Wow,
when you say it like that, it's such a thin line. It's just bizarre. One last one here. It says, ask your guest, there was a large aircraft. Is it possible it was chosen for its size? Could it be primed for a future terrorist attack?
Who knows? Yeah. It could. I mean, that was certainly the motivation of the hijackers in 9/11. And it was rather interesting that all the aircraft that they hijacked were... aircraft that were heading off on long flights, you know, coast to coast in the United States or further afield, so that they would have had full fuel tanks.
Oh, of course,
you know, maximum impact when they hit the building.
Well, then, just finally, again, I know I've said finally before, but the Malaysian situation in terms of, like, the less deep seas than the Indian Ocean, which it might have gone towards, if that's the case, if a plane hits the sea... And if the sea is as huge and whatever... sorry, there's just something coming on the news here now that something is being confirmed. It's confirmed it's hijacked. Wow, hold on a second now. There's some news here now. I think we might have to go over to the newsroom for this and see a little bit more. But there is there's a confirming of a hijacking, by the way, Jerry.
Okay.
Just happening right now as we speak here at 12 minutes to 11 o'clock. So we might get a bit more of that. But just one thing, if it did go into the sea, and if it does sink right down to the very bottom or whatever it happens to be, would something always come up to the surface? Should something be there, even a door of a plane?
It's very, very difficult for an aircraft to sink without trace, yes. The black boxes are designed, in the event of an impact, to break free of the aircraft and float. Now, and they also have little transponders which go off in contact with water. So in theory, yes, they should break free and they should give a signal that can be traced. But that didn't happen with the Air France Flight 447. So the black boxes sank with the airplane.
All right. Okay, well, listen, Jerry Byrne, thanks very much indeed for talking to us, freelance aviation journalist. And we'll follow this and give you something else in a minute or two that's just, I think, happening right now as we speak. Thank you, Jerry. Good luck.
You're very welcome.
All right, take it easy. Thanks. Bye.